It seems to me that with the advancement of Western medicine, that we started to feel really good about being able to keep people alive. And in a lot of ways, that's a real gift, right? I mean, our life expectancy has increased substantially over, I don't know, the past 100, 200 years. And in a lot of cases, that's a real benefit. But I think along with that advancement of life-sustaining practices, you know, whatever that looks like, whether it's, you know, vaccines or life-sustaining surgeries or what, you know, whatever. It feels like all of Western medicine, basically. But I think with that, somehow build this idea that death is a failure. It's a failure of Western medicine to keep people alive. And we lost somewhere along the way the knowing that death is a really natural part of living. It's like the most natural. I mean, it's something that we will all succumb to. 100% of us will.
Thanks for tuning in to White Bird Mutual Aid on 97.3 KEPW. I'm Hannah Francis. Here we talk about White Bird Clinic's past, present, and future. I interview White Bird staff, volunteers, and clients who share some of the experiences, as well as some of the knowledge that they have gathered while being a part of this community-oriented nonprofit. A little while ago, I had the honor of speaking with one of White Bird Clinic's counselors and the founder of the End of Life program, and just a profoundly beautiful and wise human being, Amy May. For the next hour, I get to share that conversation with you.
Yeah, my name is Amy May, and my job title, I'm within White Bird, I'm a counselor in the counseling department. I'm an end-of-life counselor and death doula, and I'm a licensed clinical social worker, so I guess that's my credentials, and my pronouns are she, hers.
Today, we're talking about death. I know this can be a sensitive subject. There's a lot of taboo and a lot of emotion surrounding the topic, and yet, death can be a beautiful part of life. Even if this episode makes you feel a little uncomfortable, all I hope is that it will bring up some conversation and thoughts and maybe make death feel a little less scary. It is, after all, like Amy May said, something that 100% of us will succumb to. I'm certainly glad to know that people are talking about death and that we can too. The End of Life program at White Bird Clinic was started only a few years ago in the counseling department in 2018. In this episode, we speak about what Amy's job entails, how the program was started, and some social stigmas around death. The specific services that Amy May provides differ with each client. The two main areas that she provides support in are emotional and physical support for folks who are dying and for people whose loved ones are dying or have died. She provides these services no matter the client's socioeconomic status. Whether that is creating an advance directive, carrying out funeral plans, or helping create a celebration of life, Amy May does this with a special kind of care and attention that I have a hard time finding anywhere else.
Number one, my goal is to emotionally support clients in the dying process. So, and that's like through counseling services. So we're talking about the fears or anxieties or sadness, the grief of what that means, working through the emotional side of it. And then the spiritual aspects of what their beliefs might be for what's happening now or what happens after one dies. And then there's the logistical side of kind of case management work of coordinating with other agencies, either the hospice agency that a client is working with, or if they're not, through other service agencies, if they're seeing other mental health workers, or if they're in the hospital and working with social workers there at the hospital to help them support, get the support they need. So that's just kind of a broad overview. So it's counseling services, kind of the emotional, spiritual exploration of where they're at, and then the logistical needs, which are vast. That can be, like I said, coordinating with hospice services to either, it appears that they need more, I don't know, more help in their home, or if they are trying to figure out what sort of interment they're interested in, if they're trying to square away, cremation plans, or if they're utilizing Death with Dignity, helping them navigate that process and coordinating with End of Life Choices Oregon, or ELCOR is the acronym. I've had clients who really struggle in staying housed sometimes, either because they are challenged with managing their finances in a way to, be paying their rent on time, or just adhering to behavioral expectations of facilities that they're in. I've had a client I worked with who was actually terminated from their hospice services because of substance use that they were continuing to engage in. So then I had to try to advocate for him on a number of levels where his hospice probably would have if they had been engaged. I've helped planned in death ceremonies for folks who utilize Death with Dignity or medical aid in dying, and create what the individual wants that to look like, what that day will look like, how it will feel, who'll be around. I'm sure that there's some gaping holes there of things that I didn't include, but that's part of it.
I was curious what led Amy to pursue this career, and how she started the End of Life program.
I'll just start at the beginning. My mom died in 2011, and it was, a life-changing, devastating experience. A few years later, I was, of course, still coping with it, and I went back to school. I was trying to finish up my degree. I was 30-something years old and just wanting to do something, and took a class on death and dying. And it was during that class that I realized, oh my gosh, this is what I need to do, is I want to work with people who have had similar experiences from the one that I had that was really difficult. I really struggled with making sense of it. I guess a little more background than that is I was born and raised in the South in Arkansas. My family all holds very strong Christian faith and values, but I diverged from that on my own spiritual path. And so when mom died, it was really evident that my family had some comfort and help coping because of their beliefs and their faith. And I didn't have that in the same way. I mean, I thought that I understood something about death and dying, or like my beliefs around it, but I was really forced to confront it when she died. And So then fast forward a couple of years down the road, and I'm learning about folks who are in the field of death and dying, and realize, oh my gosh, this is what I want to do, is just to be there with folks who have all of these questions, who have all of these feelings, who don't necessarily have the support that they need to help them either cope with the death of someone, but even more so, start to understand the process of death and dying, and to support an individual and their family or loved ones in that process.
Amy May found Whitebird through an MSW, or a medical social worker, internship while getting her degree.
So I finished my bachelor's degree. I went on to get my MSW. My mentor, who was my teacher in that class, suggested that I go into social work because it would make me more employable in the field of hospice and end of life. And so that's the route that I took. And I ended up at Whitebird doing my MSW internship in January 2017. And it wasn't necessarily the kind of agency that I was thinking I would work for, because I was very specific to wanting to work in end of life, and Whitebird wasn't doing that. But it was where I was able to get an internship. And I'm grateful that I did, because it really opened up my mind and my understanding of so many folks who are facing different sorts of barriers and challenges, who are part of marginalized communities for whatever reason, whether it's for race or socioeconomic, or you know, wherever they, you know, substance use, wherever they find themselves, aren't able to access end of life care in the same way that other privileged folks are.
Hospice services are extremely valuable, but there's a remaining need for care for folks who do not have access to certain privileges. One of the unique advantages of Whitebird is the ability to see a need in the community and organize to try to provide it. And through this process of striving to provide for people in need, the End of Life program was founded.
So I ended up completing all of my internships through Whitebird. I'm fortunate because we have such a wide array of services that we offer, that I did a semester in the crisis office, I did a semester in CAHOOTS, I did a semester with Rock Medicine, and then my last semester in counseling. And through those years of working in those departments, I was hired on in the crisis department as a crisis worker. I was hired as a CAHOOTS crisis worker, and I still hold a shift. I still work as a CAHOOTS crisis worker one day a week.
In case you're unclear, CAHOOTS is the Mobile Crisis Intervention Unit of Whitebird Clinic, in which a crisis worker and a medic are dispatched by the ambulatory line in Eugene and Springfield metropolitan areas.
It was through CAHOOTS that the end-of-life counseling program, and the seed was planted. I met a CAHOOTS client on the street one day. He actually approached us in the van and said he was expressing gratitude for the support he had gotten from the CAHOOTS team through his years of living on the street. And he shared that he had recently been housed because he was on hospice. He had received a terminal diagnosis. And of course, then my ears perked up. I was like, oh, what is that like? You know, where are you living? Do you feel comfortable? And just, you know, was asking questions. And he shared that, no, he was really scared and had a lot of anxiety over what this meant, what the rest of his life was going to look like. And he didn't feel like he had the support that he needed. So I had him sign a release of information that day and ask him if it was okay that I contact his hospice social worker to see if there were other ways that we could help provide support, because he trusted Whitebird. He had a long relationship with staff. And he said, absolutely. Yeah, that would be great. So I called the social worker and she said, oh, heavens, yes, that would be fantastic, because she felt it was beyond her scope of practice to really understand and be able to meet him where he was at with the barriers and the needs that he had from his years of being unhoused, from his years of substance use, all of the different challenges that that was bringing to the table at end of life. So she was really excited for us to get involved in helping support him. So then that left me in this place of like, well, how do I do this? What is the right platform for which to engage in services with this guy? Because it's not CAHOOTS work. It's not crisis on the streets. This is something different. And so my supervisor at the time, Kate, suggested going to the counseling department and talking to them. They knew me. I had done my last internship with them. And so I did. I met with them and said, hey, I think that I would really like to start doing end-of-life counseling in people's homes, meeting them where they're at, and got 100% support.
Amy May saw a gap in our society and is trying to address it with her work, and I admire her so much for doing what she's doing. I don't know what else to say about that. I just wanted to say she's amazing.
And so that's where it started. And through that hospice social worker that I contacted, I got referrals. I was starting to meet other hospice workers. I got involved with Death with Dignity and work really closely with the End of Life Choices organization and their volunteers.
So Death with Dignity is a legislation that was passed in Oregon in the 90s, legalizing the use of a doctor-prescribed and self-administered lethal medication. This is only available for people who receive a 6-month terminal diagnosis from their doctor. In other words, the Death with Dignity Act is to allow people with terminal illness to control the way in which they die. I asked Amy May to talk a little bit more about Death with Dignity.
Oregon was the first state to legalize what they initially call like doctor-assisted suicide, which I think is a really inaccurate description of it. So for someone to access medical aid in dying, they must be terminal. They must have received a 6-month terminal diagnosis from their doctor. Well, they don't necessarily have to be engaged in hospice. That can be part of it, but they don't have to be. So in order to access the medication, there have to be two doctors who have gone through the patient's records and agree that, yes, this patient is dying, imminently dying, meaning in, you know, 6 months or less. And then they sign off on writing the prescription for the medication that is, that would end their life. When someone chooses or someone thinks that they want to use medical aid in dying, they have to make a verbal request to the prescribing doctor. A lot of folks, doctors, either aren't comfortable doing that or they're not able to because of the policies of the agency or the clinic under which they work. They're not able to write those prescriptions. So often the clients that I've worked with have utilized the pro bono doctors that work with End of Life Choices Oregon. They're volunteer doctors with decades and decades of experience, and they work closely with the individual looking through their records. So anyway, the individual would make that verbal request that would be documented in the record. And then 2 weeks later, they make a second verbal request, and they have to be able to articulate that they understand that this medication would end their life. And then once that prescription, let's see, the two doctors have to sign off on it. And then, once the prescription is sent in, it takes a little time, to be processed up in Portland before the individual gets the medication. So when they take the medication, they have to be able to administer it themselves. They have to be able to articulate that they understand what the medication is going to do, and then they have to be able to take it themselves. There's a process in mixing it. You have to take anti-nausea medication a certain number of hours beforehand. You can't eat certain things for the 24 hours before, so that the medication will, you know, have maximum absorption. And it's a bit of a process. The idea behind it and why it's important that it's not called doctor-assisted suicide or even like medical suicide is because these folks are imminently dying. So someone who is either attempting or is considering or succeeding at suicide is someone who is not otherwise dying, whose life would continue if it wasn't for that choice to end their life. That's not the case with terminal patients. One of the main reasons that this was implemented was to, again, bring back some autonomy and some choice and empower an individual to die in a peaceful way of their choosing. There's a lot of different diseases and illnesses that progress in really horrendous ways that cause an immense amount of suffering, even with the best pain management, you know, that's out there. And so it's not right for everyone. It's a totally individual decision. And there are lots of feelings and lots of beliefs around it. And I definitely want to honor all of those differing feelings and beliefs around it. But I have personally witnessed folks who were really suffering, who utilized it in the midst of this really loving, supportive environment, who were able to give the gift to themselves of a peaceful death. And I think that that is not something, no matter what my beliefs are, that is not a choice that I feel entitled to take away from anybody. I want to really highlight that it's a very specific protocol, because I do get calls from clients who are like, I'm suffering and I want to utilize this process, but don't really understand all the specifics around it. Hopefully that helps.
End of Life Choices Oregon, or ELCOR, the organization that Amy mentioned, is a nonprofit that is dedicated to helping clients through processes such as death with dignity. To find out more, you can go to eolcoregon.org.
End of life, I mean, the dying process is, I believe, a sacred rite of passage that, at least in our recent history, has not been granted the honor and the respect and the reverence that it deserves. And we tend to have, you know, some ritual after someone dies, but which I think is lovely, but bringing that in to pre-death, where the individual can participate in it and really with a lot of intention create the death that they want and how they want it all to look. I think it's so important to bring that back. I mean, it hasn't been that long since we were doing that. And some cultures still, you know, have continued to do that despite like Western, you know, like the medicalization of death and dying. I feel a lot of passion and inspiration to try to bring that back to the individual, is empowering them to not just death, but to have the life up until death that they desire.
This view of looking at death and wanting to celebrate it as a rite of passage struck me as a very powerful and unique viewpoint. But why don't more of us see death this way? What parts of our culture have made us look at it in this fearful and denialist mindset?
our culture obviously has such a stigma around talking about death and like acknowledging it. And I mean, it's such a deeply ingrained and huge issue that it's not really easy to talk about all at once. But I wonder if you could talk a little bit about maybe why you think that is, how our culture has shaped that fear and stigma. Because like you said, it's not in all cultures.
Mm-hmm. A big part of it, I think, is the medicalization of the process. Folks were dying at home up until not that long ago, and their bodies would lie there in their homes for their family to tend to and care for until they were interred. Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. And so it seems like maybe there was this shift that like, let's keep people living a little longer into like, we can't let them die at any cost. To where now we have like these, which can sometimes, so yeah, I think that has had a huge impact on our denial of death within our predominant culture. There's a lot of people talking about this right now, especially the hospice field has really gained a lot of speed in the last, four decades. And people are becoming more aware of what our choices are there.
I have so much gratitude for Amy May and her time and presence and for the amazing work that she does. If you have any questions for Amy May about the end-of-life services or any of the things that we talked about today, you can email me at whitebirdmutualaid@gmail.com. Or you can email Amy at amymay@whitebirdclinic.org. You can also call the clinic number at 541-342-8255. And for more information on Whitebird Counseling Services, you can go to whitebirdclinic.org/counseling on 97.3 KEPW. Thank you for listening. I'm Hannah Francis.